You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. It's a grind for all of you Monday through Friday, and we appreciate you taking us along with you for part of that day. Hopefully we brighten up part of your day a half an hour or 45 minutes at a time. We're the Raining Jays, John Corrales, that's me of MassLive.com, joined by Jay King of The Athletic for a rare postgame appearance. After a 103-96 ugly, gross win. It's a win. It's a win. That's good. The rest of this game was just, I don't even want to talk about it. If you didn't watch it, consider yourself lucky. But here we are. We watched and we'll talk about it. The star of the game.
Yay.
Start of the game was Jason Tatum. So let's just talk about Jason Tatum. We'll get to rumors and all that other stuff later on. But let's start with Jason Tatum, who was pretty good tonight. 25 points on 6 of 13 shooting. 25 points on 13 shots is pretty damn good because he hit a career-high 12 free throws, 12 attempts, 12 of 12 from the line. The 12 attempts ties a career-high. So that means he was 11 of 12 once before in his career. Jay, he came out of the gates aggressive. We always talk about, you always talk about, especially this need for the Celtics team to attempt free throws. The team took 14. Jason Tatum took 12 of them.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, part of that was because the Cavaliers just weren't really interested in stopping dunks. So when you're getting wide open dunks, you're not going to get a lot of free throws anyway. As far as Tatum's performance, just another reminder that if and when he does become a foul drawer, his game will just go to another level, because when he's in the post and when he's driving and is able to create contact and get to the bucket, it's just another layer to his game, and it adds another layer of efficiency, and it helps him pile up those easy points so that you're more okay with him when he takes the fadeaway jumpers that are contested. Because if he can pile up free throws, like, okay, whatever. You know, if he's going to become a free throw drawer, then those ISOs become much more efficient, because he'll be able to go at guys and create contact and get to the line. He just needs to stop settling. And when he doesn't settle, a lot of the times good things happen. And that was the case tonight.
Yeah, I still think he settled a bit too much tonight. Like,
there was one when he missed Hayward on a cut. Hayward had a post up on Clarkson, like right underneath the bucket.
Yep.
And Tatum just kind of backed out Larry Nance, was super excited to ISO Larry Nance and took a long three instead. But yeah, he definitely did. There were moments when he did settle still.
Well, which is fine. I mean, he's going to take some of those shots. But in, like, I saw this game and I didn't think it was the best Tatum game. Like I said, a bunch of those were, I think shots that he settled for, not every shot, but then there were those times where he got aggressive and was looking to draw the fouls. The whole reason for me to say all this is he had 25 points on a night where I was like, you know, I was kind of so-so on the rest of his offensive game. So that's how good he can be, that he can just have a ho-hum game and just drop 25 on you. That's why when we talk about these trade rumors and why Jason Tatum can be such a trump card in these kind of talks, it's nights like tonight where if you can unleash him, he can be that guy that if he does, like you said, become the foul drawer that can go out there and get 8, 10, 12 free throws a game, that would put him, well, that's a lot, but somewhere around eight free throws a game, like that would just significantly change his overall offensive game and would make him a cornerstone kind of guy. So go ahead.
I haven't thought through this theory very often. I'm kind of just spitballing right now, but I wonder if, you know, he'll be a guy who obviously he hasn't taken the leap the Celtics wanted to or would have loved from him in a sophomore season. He's still been really good. He's still done a lot of positive things. He's still scored a lot of points. He's still been an impactful defender. He's still capable of creating shots against basically anyone. He still has the upside. But I wonder if part of the reason why he hasn't taken that leap is that the strength just hasn't developed yet, and that the next step for him will come, that real leap for him will come whenever he gets that strength necessary to finish through contact and invite contact instead of shy away. The one play for me that stood out even more than the free throw attempts or the free throw drawing was when he rolled to the hoop, and I think it was Jaren Blossengame who came over to try to stop him at the rim. And obviously Jaren Blossengame isn't the greatest rim protector in the league. He's not Rudy Gobert. He probably would barely be playing or not playing at all on most teams in the NBA. But Tatum just kind of bounced into him, went up, and finished. And those are the types of plays, like just finishing through people, that he hasn't been able. There's still times when he's going to the hoop and he just loses it out of bounds, or like the strength still hasn't been there, and maybe that'll never come. Maybe he'll never be a strong guy, but you see a lot of the time, even a guy like Kevin Durant, who never became a bulky guy, but he gets more and more strength as the seasons go by, and he's able to draw contact and play through people. And you wonder if that's part of the reason why Tatum hasn't taken that next leap. And it's just because the strength hasn't totally arrived yet. He's only 20 years old. And maybe that will come, you know, over the next couple of years as he puts on more and more weight.
I buy into that completely. I mean, especially when you consider that his game is being elusive. His game is those fadeaways and kind of getting around people and using his length to avoid the contact. And I don't know. Again, continuing down this road, this spitballing road, maybe that's why he developed the game, because he was always like skinny and taking the contact isn't exactly beneficial to him. He needs to be elusive. Like if he's going to score, he needs to avoid the contact and find ways to get around it and over it and by it. So, yeah, I can see that. And he said that before the season. Danny Ainge has said that. So that is a stated goal for him eventually, and he'll have to keep working on that. And I can see that being part of the case. I can also see part of the leap forward that he wants to take requires him to be, like tonight, he was a centerpiece of the offense. And, you know, Al Horford had 8 assists. I got to look at how many went to Tatum, or even with Kyrie out, forget about that. With Kyrie out and Marcus Morris out, that's just more opportunity for Tatum to go out there and kind of shine and do what he does. And that's, I think that's something that he kind of needs, that him being a third option is a little limiting right now. And he probably could use 35, 36, 38 minutes of being a number one or number two option. So I think that, and look, I don't want to make too much of the performance he had against the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were really playing very, very little defense.
Their defense stinks.
It's very bad. But at the same time, I think Tatum does seem to have these games when Kyrie is out. When Kyrie doesn't play, Tatum kind of finds a little bit more of a groove where he can be more aggressive looking for his own shot. And I think that's just part of his development. And this goes back to some of the stuff I've been saying about him and Jaylen Brown and opportunity. It's tough for them to find their groove and to play freely when they want to run, and like they're thoroughbreds and there's a jockey on their back pulling the reins, holding them, and they just want to run, and that's not comfortable for them. So I think there's some of that that's happening as well. Let's take a break. We're going to come back, talk about the rest of the guys.
Yes, no more Celtics Cavs talk.
Well, a little bit more Celtics Cavs talk.
We didn't talk about
the other guys who played. But Jay, we've only got like 8 more minutes of it. And then we'll talk some more about the rumors. We'll give you updates on the rumors, and then we'll wrap it up here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. This was Gordon Hayward's first NBA regular season game back in Cleveland since the injury, but he did play a preseason game there. So any sort of reminder of what happened there, I think every time he goes into that building, he's going to kind of have that reminder. But it didn't seem to bother him here, again, against a very bad Cavs team in bad Cavs defense. 9 of 14. He did not hit a three, but he did have 5 assists, 18 points, 5 assists, 6 rebounds, and a block shot. Nice game from him, even though his 3-point shooting wasn't there tonight.
When he was running some actions with Tice, and Tice was just opening wide open.
Like, yeah. Oh my God.
Rolling wide open down the lane. It was like, oh my goodness, the Cavs aren't even
3 straight dunks or something. Like,
yeah, it was incredible how many dunks Tice got from Hayward in a row. The Cavs don't love playing defense, and Hayward and Tice definitely took advantage of it during that stretch. This wasn't like a crisp outing from the Celtics. They didn't seem to be locked in. I thought Jaylen Brown had like one stretch of really great energy in the first half. I thought Marcus Smart's shooting obviously stood out, and Hayward, you know, just another nice floor game from him. The Celtics, he remains how good he can get over the rest of the regular season remains one of the most important things for them. Like how much of A, his strength can he recover, and B, his confidence can he regain, and C, how much can he adapt to what he currently is, and his place in the current Celtics ecosystem will help go a long way toward how potent they are, I think, in the playoffs, because obviously he's a really important piece for them. And if he's helping, it seems like every time he has a good game, they sort of reach another level. And he doesn't always have good games, but when he does, it's like, okay, they jump. And so I think that's really important. I have no idea, honestly, how much he'll grow. I do think that, you know, this process has been obviously tough. But if he can grow and progress a little bit more over the rest of this regular season, that's probably the most important thing for the Celtics over the rest of this regular season.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, he was brought in here to be one of the top two options on the Celtics, and this is as I've been mentioning all along, and caught up with him afterwards in New York for just a quick couple of questions. This is the 4-month mark now, and the 4 months that he lost over the summer, this is, to me, the first four months of the season are kind of what he was hoping to get out of the summer. And even in the summer, he said, I thought it was really interesting because he brought it up. I didn't bring it up, where he said the summer you can go play free and get your swag back. And it's difficult to do in a regular season game. And that is very, very telling that he brought that up, because that's the thing that he hasn't gotten in his recovery. And that's, to me, that's a critical element of this, that summer, not just to go get your, you know, figure things out and get your timing and your ability and your wind and your whatever. It's the confidence to go out there and with no consequences, No consequence. If you suck, you suck. It doesn't matter. You go in the next day and you play 5-on-5 again, and you just keep on going. You just play free, and you can just keep firing. You don't have to worry about setting anybody up. Like, this is a dynamic that people, I don't think, really take into account. He's trying to get back himself back into this, and he developed into this passer that midway through this portion of the season, guys on the team were saying, you've got to look for your own shot first, because he was passing so much that teams were playing him for the pass, and he was starting to turn the ball over. In those summer 5-on-5 sessions, he wouldn't have, I guarantee you, he would not have been passing like that. He might have just off of his own shooting, but he would have been aggressively looking for his own offense, because that's the entire point of those 5-on-5 sessions, for him to go find his own offense. So he's gotten those 4 months, but not the same 4 months he would have gotten over the summer. So it's been difficult, and this recovery isn't the same recovery that he would have gotten if he hadn't had that second surgery. Now here we are 4 months later, and he's starting to get those reps under his belt, and he's starting to put together more good stretches. And now the key for Gordon Hayward is, like I was just saying, driving to score. Set going for his own shot, looking for his own shot, and then passing off of his own offense. Because if he's driving just to pass, then he's going to be just a little too passive and not really drawing defenses, and he's going to go back to turning the ball over. But if he's driving to score and looking to get his own shot, and if he's confident trying to finish and finish in traffic, then he can start dumping the ball off. And he's been doing that a little bit more lately. And I think between now and the end of the season, that's going to be the number one thing for him to focus on. Driving and attacking for his own offense first, and then passing off of that.
Facts. I am not bored. This is just true.
You cannot agree with me without adding the caveat. I am not bored. I merely agree.
I also want to let the people know that I am podcasting through it tonight. I just want to let the people know how big of a hero I am. That I have spent most of my day in bed, and I had to go to urgent care, and I've got some sort of bacteria or virus that I'm now taking antibiotics for. I don't even know what the name of it is. They gave it to me, but I'm here. And I'm podcasting, and I'm sacrificing my body, my health, my livelihood for the listeners. And I just thought everyone should know that.
I thought for a second you were going to drop the Kyrie Irving. What was the thing that he said? My eyes are how I make my money, or my eyes are my livelihood, or something like that.
My eyes are how I make my money. And, yeah, yeah. And they are, one of them is very, very red right now.
Dude, I hope, when's the next time they're at home? What's that, on Thursday?
This is true, yes.
Yeah, don't go to that game.
No, so I should be good by Thursday. Oh, I already asked, and it should be wiped out by Thursday. At least I shouldn't be contagious. I won't be contagious by then. My eye may be red as hell.
Great.
But I don't think I'll be contagious.
I'm gonna be on the other side of the building then. What else do we have tonight? How about Terry Rozier? Let's mention Terry Rozier not going out and playing well, supporting the J. King. Is he as good as better as a starter than a bench player? This is not a good game for Terry Rozier, especially playing at home in front of, like they said during the game, like 20 friends and family in front of his dad. He had a not so great night. 8 points, 4 assists, couple of steals. Not the best night in the world for him. You kind of glossed over Marcus Smart shooting. Can we just really talk about Marcus Smart shooting for a second? The 4-point play, like, Marcus Smart is now rising up when guys are chasing over the top of picks to draw fouls on threes. Like, that's where we are with Marcus Smart shooting.
He's at 37.7% on the season.
It's ridiculous.
I still won't believe it until he gets to the season.
All he's done is significantly improve his 3-point shooting month to month to month, and you're still not going
to
buy it.
I still have to see it, man. I have to see it forever.
What more haven't you seen? What more do you need to see?
As I said, make him do it for a full season, man. This is Marcus Smart we're talking about.
He's been doing it for the full season.
It hasn't been a full season.
Jay, come on now. He's played 52 games.
It's been a very promising stretch, games. I will admit.
A promising stretch. Here are his splits. Okay, 7 games in October, he shot 17%. Okay, oh, Marcus Smart, same old Marcus Smart. Then 37% November, dropped to 32. Then that, you're like, okay. Then 43% in January, and now he's currently shooting, well, he was going into this game at 45%, and he hit 4 of 5. I'm not going to do the math here, but that's 80%. So he's gonna raise it up. Well, actually, let's see. He was 4 of 5, and then his totals for February coming in were 5 of 11. So he's 9 of 16. That's up. That's going to be, what, like 51, 52%? So I like it. I like it. I'm in. I believe it.
I know you do. You believed it a while ago.
I did. I'm an early adopter in the Marcus Smart. I've always waited for this, though. Like, it's always been weird to me that he wasn't at least an average three-point shooter. Because of that, his free throw shooting has always been decent. Like, he's always been somewhere in the mid-70s as a free throw shooter. And people who are decent free throw shooters don't tend to be that bad from three. There was always something, and I could never understand it. He was always bucking that trend. And now, finally, I don't know if it's whether it's a health thing, because they keep bringing up the hand injuries from last year. I don't know if it's just the relief of having the contract settled. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the hard work finally pays off and something clicked. But I've been waiting for Marcus Smart to at least be decent. I don't know that he's going to shoot 40-something percent. I mean, I think that's a little ridiculous. But I've always wondered why he hasn't been decent. And I that's why I have a stronger tendency to believe this a little bit, because his other shooting has been okay. So this finally starts to make a little bit of sense to me. That's why.
It's funny because the Kyle Lowry comparison has always been one of Smart's comparisons, right? And Lowry, it took him a long time to become a three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. And then once he did, he's been very good pretty much ever since.
I mean, the comparison is like Jason Kidd. So, like, Jason Kidd was terrible for most of his career. Then all of a sudden he became a good three. But he took much longer. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens.
Yeah. And if this is real, it's a huge deal. Oh, it's yeah. a huge deal. Even if he's mid-30s. It's a huge deal. And I think one of the things that he's focused on is obviously taking better shots and limiting the heat checks. And he's finishing much better at the rim, mostly because he's not forcing things at the rim. He's cut down most of his long two attempts. Like, that was a thing he did probably too often last year that he's getting rid of now. He's just playing a lot smarter basketball, and knocking down the threes is another layer to that. It's absolutely comical when you look at his true shooting percentage this season, which I think now is probably up near 56%, and compare it to the previous high of his career, which is like 49%. It is a huge, huge, huge improvement. And so he's having by far the best offensive season of his career. And if he can be a good offensive player, and obviously he's always been able to run pick and rolls, and he's been able to do things. But if he can be enough of a threat that defenses can't totally abandon him, that's huge. Because everything else he does, you need him, you want him on the court. And if his shooting is real, and if you can pass it to him when he's open, and if you can trust that he's at least got a pretty good chance of knocking that shot down, that's important. That's really important. And we'll see if it's real. As I said, I will be the last person to buy into Marcus Smart as a viable three-point shooter, but he's certainly shot the heck out of it lately.
He certainly has shot the heck out of it lately. So his true shooting percentage tonight was 81.4, and going into tonight, 56.2, and his career is 49.1, which was also his rookie year, his single best prior to this season. So it's just a ridiculous jump. But those are the actual numbers of what you were saying. So, look, if he can be anywhere near average, and we've said this for how long, all it means is some of the defenses that we've seen, those ridiculous wide open threes. I think it was during the Philly series where no one was within 15 feet of him and he shot two of them and missed. Like, that's not going to happen if he's going to hit at this rate. So that just changes the dynamic significantly, because now Kyrie Irving is going to be on the floor with him, and that just opens up that much more space. And if you just give Kyrie Irving an extra inch, never mind how much space you're going to, whatever that space is going to be guarding Marcus Smart now, it's significant development. So we'll see how it goes moving forward. Marcus Smart just continuing trying to prove Jay King wrong all season long. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, update you on the Anthony Davis situation, the trade rumors, and all of that. Stick around here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Jay, the Lakers are out. They're done. It's been reported today that they're out of the running for the Anthony Davis.
They don't want Anthony Davis anymore.
They're like, you know what? Screw this. We're done bidding against ourselves.
Do not buy it.
Is that not the dumbest report? They're like, we're sick of bidding against ourselves. Like, come on.
And look, it's not themselves the Lakers are bidding against. It's, first of all, everyone else in the league. Second of all, the threat of Boston in the summer. And third of all, the threat of the possibility that someone wins the lottery and would have an inclination of trading that top pick for Anthony Davis. The Lakers are betting against everyone else that could be threats. It has nothing to do with bidding against themselves. This isn't a thing where the Lakers are like alone and the only team. I think they feel the pressure, but I also think that New Orleans probably knows that basically everyone on Los Angeles' roster is touchable, with the exception of LeBron James. And they know that if they need to, they can probably push for a whole heap of first-round picks. And I do think the Lakers have desperation to get this done, because obviously, you know, it looks like Davis really wants to play in Los Angeles, but he still has a year and a half left on his contract. And if this goes to the summer, there will be other suitors, including the Celtics, who can put together really good offers. And I know some people are kind of lower on the Lakers trade assets, certainly, than they've been before this season. And I get that. But I do think that package is intriguing. Like Kuzma, Ingram, Ball, those guys all have upside. And if you throw Josh Hart in there, first-round picks, even though the first-round picks won't be good, like, that's an intriguing offer. But they have to be desperate. And the Celtics, you know, these next couple of days before the trade deadline, they're just sitting there like, please, please don't go anywhere, Anthony Davis. Please at least give us a chance to jump into the proceedings come the summertime.
Yeah, it's intriguing, although, I mean, not to overreact to one game, but they just got destroyed in Indy by 40 points, 42 points. There's this great photo out there of the Lakers on the bench, three empty seats, and LeBron at the end of the bench, which is just funny. I don't know if that means anything or not, but because we're here, I'm going to assume that it means everything. And I don't know that, like, Josh Hart has value. Kyle Kuzma, okay. Lonzo Ball, I'm not as high on Lonzo Ball as other people. Like, he's a great passer. He's a good defender. I don't know. Is he going to eventually figure out how to shoot? I hate his shot. Is that what you're going to build your team around? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think that the Lakers have any sort of leverage here at all, other than the Pelicans' desire to just get this done and over with. And I still don't think that that's worth taking that deal without being able to see if another deal, if you can get another deal that's better. It may well be the best deal that's out there. Danny Ainge might try to play hardball and say he's making a very aggressive offer and then decide he's not going to include Jason Tatum. And that's going to be the risk that they take. But that offer from the Lakers is still pretty much going to be there throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, you'd have to expect that's not going anywhere.
Yeah. The only risk now, it's such a weird situation. The only risk now is that you've got the next few months plus the playoffs. The Pelicans can sit Anthony Davis because they don't want anything to happen to him. But no other team is going to sit all of these players that are going to be involved. And you just run the risk now over the between the trade deadline and the end of the until we get to the summer, that someone involved somewhere in this, whether it's the Celtics, the Lakers, Chicago, whomever else that might get, the Knicks might get involved, that something happens that throws a monkey wrench into this entire thing. And that's just a risk that everybody here takes, that by waiting, everybody's just kind of like, all right, let's just everybody get through the season, everybody get through healthy, and let's not have any sort of thing foul this up, and now we're not going to get the offer that we thought we did.
Yeah, I would be surprised if the Pelicans played him. Oh, it would be a bizarre move to play him, even on a limited basis, especially a guy who's dealt with injuries. Like, if you keep him beyond the trade deadline, you got to sit him. You have to.
Absolutely.
You have to, because
sit him, pay him, say go home. We'll pay you to go home.
Yeah, it would make no sense for them to play him even on a limited basis. Like, there's been talk about potentially doing. I just don't see that.
If he goes out there and does, if something happens to him, then holy shit. Like, that would just be, what a disaster that would be.
For everyone involved.
Oh my, like
everyone involved.
Like, that would just be the worst thing. Aside from the, you know, obvious, you don't want anybody to get hurt. Like, you don't want a John Wall situation, which, holy shit, another thing. Like, that poor guy, you know, gets surgery to avoid the Achilles thing, and then he slips and falls and tears his Achilles. Are you kidding me? So,
and now he has Matt Online that Juju Smith-Schuster made a joke about his injury on Instagram.
Oh, geez, I didn't see that.
So there's another layer to the brutality of John Wall's injury.
God.
Bruh, what you doing at the crib? Juju Smith-Schuster put on Instagram. And Wall replied, funny guy and all that, but I'll see you around, bruh.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, God. All right, so that's
the NBA is wild, man.
The NBA is wild. Look, the trade deadline's coming around the corner. We've got Marc Gasol on the verge of going to Charlotte, apparently. We'll see how that goes. We've got
He could end up playing the Celtics in the first round.
That could be a very real thing. And then Mike Conley could be moving before the trade deadline. Who knows what else is happening by the trade deadline? Dario Saric is apparently being shopped. There are a lot of names. What we thought was going to be a quiet deadline is now potentially one of the deadlines where some of the biggest names in NBA history could move. So it's a wild next, whatever, however many hours it is by the time you listen to this. But Thursday at 3 p.m. is coming up, and it's going to be crazy. We'll keep an eye on it for you. We'll be back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you're not a subscriber, go ahead and subscribe. Regular listeners, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating and good review and share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
And also, please feel free to thank me on Twitter for being such a hero.